KUER News in Salt Lake City. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in Radio West, we're talking about the value of teachers. And not just value in an abstract sense. If we really value teachers, how much money do we or should we pay them? The economist Dick Starts, who's going to be on the show today, has a number in mind. 40% more, he says. So we'll talk about that, but also where teachers in the U.S. and Utah stack up, because money's not everything, but let's be honest, it matters. We'll be right back.
KUER's new project, The Hive Mind, puts you right in the newsroom with our reporters. Here's how it works. Look under the News and Programs tab at KUER.org, click on The Hive Mind, and you'll see what one of our reporters is working on. Maybe it's affordable housing or national parks fees. It changes. You tell us what you want to know, vote on other listeners' questions, and we'll try to figure it out. It's like this. The news is for you, and you should have some say in how we make it. Join the Hive Mind at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Audra Yoakam wrote us this morning to explain why she teaches, why she stays in the profession, why she almost left. She's only been a teacher for 3 years now. And Audra says she teaches because she's good at it. And I'll bet she is. She teaches because, as she put it, I get paid to help kids realize their potential, to provide some consistency in their lives. Having a kid have this aha moment, she told us, is the best. We heard the same thing this morning from a teacher on the west side of Salt Lake who wrote to say that they became a teacher because they wanted a profession that would help me give to society. This person has been at the school for 17 years now, and they don't plan on leaving for an easier position on the east side. They wrote, I give it my all for my students every single day. Beth Perney wrote from Indiana. She just happened to be the drama teacher for our producer, Elaine Clark. And Beth says she teaches because it is her calling. The kids are what keeps me coming back year after year, she wrote. God help me, I love them. But we've also been hearing from teachers about why they leave or think about leaving or want to leave the profession. As Audra put it, it's really hard. She put really in all caps. The parents can be tough and, she said, the pay sucks. This is something we heard from Matt, who's a 14-year veteran English teacher at Park City High School. Matt told us that he loves his job, believes it's difficult but important work, but he said, it frustrates me when people say nobody does it for the money. I do it for the money, he wrote. I have a family that I'm supporting. And this is the difficulty for teachers. Most of them, they love it, but they also want to be paid more for it. And why does this matter? Well, it matters because all of this says something about how we value teachers. And that's the question we're going to talk about today. How do we value teachers? And how much do we value them? Where does Utah stack up? Where does the country stack up to the rest of the world? How much do we really, really value teachers? We're going to begin with Dick Starts. He's an economist who teaches at UC Santa Barbara. He writes about education for the DC think tank Brookings Institution. And he's joining us today from the studios of UC Santa Barbara. Dick Starts, welcome to you. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning.
What are you hearing in those comments, I guess, before we dig into some particulars?
I have to say I was thinking that maybe you don't need an economist. You should just let the teachers talk.
Isn't it true? Yeah.
Yeah. You got emails from people who sure sound like exactly the kind of people we want taking care of our kids, who are doing it in large part because they love it, but they've got a problem, which is, like all of us, when they're not on the job, they've got to pay their mortgage or their rent, and they've got to buy groceries, and they've got to think about sending their kids to college. And you can love a job, you can be great at a job, but you still need to get paid.
Yeah. So I want to back up and just give us a – let's start with where the United States stacks up with other countries. There was this report that was released last fall that gives us kind of a new view about that. And I guess this is no surprise. We probably have a hunch that compared to other developed industrial countries in terms of teacher salaries, we're way down there, it seems.
We are. And it's actually kind of scary. There's really some serious economics work which suggests one of the reasons the United States is kind of the powerhouse of the world is because we've had this great K through 12 education system that was close to universal. It really gave people the skills they needed and made them good citizens. And we had it when other countries didn't. Well, other countries now do too, and they've caught up with us, and some of them have passed us. And in most of the countries we compete with, teachers are paid better, and in many of them, it's a more prestigious occupation.
Hmm. Do you have a sense, and I know this probably would take us an hour to really dig into this, but why is that? Is it about the way we value them, or is it even more practical? It's more systemic, that there's some sort of strategy we have built in there.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is a political question.
Sure.
Because everybody says they're in favor of education, but when it comes to spending, it hasn't been going very well. Now, of course, part of what happened, if you take a very long view, is if you go back, say, before the 1970s, you know, teaching was one of the very few number of professional jobs that was really open to most women. And the majority of teachers were women then. The majority of teachers are women now. Well, now that we've at least made a lot of progress in fixing that problem, high-skilled women have more opportunity. So whereas we used to actually pay somewhat better than we do now, but in addition, there's just been this shift of people who have opportunities to do something else, and some of them take the something else.
Hmm. How do teachers, Dick, compare to other American workers with a comparable education? Because you talked about how, in some ways, looking at this is kind of the right comparison.
Well, it is in some ways the right comparison. So the facts are that you'd kind of like to compare teachers to other people with a college education, and teachers get paid less on average than others with a college education. Exactly how much depends a little bit on how you measure it. But there is another way that again, in some sense, you don't need an economist for people to think about this. We know we have a reasonable number of really great teachers. And we got a whole lot of pretty good teachers. And we have, you know, we do, like in anything, we have a few teachers who aren't so good. If you really think that we actually have good enough teachers for what our kids need, then there's not a great argument for raising their pay. But I think most of us think that while we've seen, or our kids have seen, some teachers who are fantastic because they do love the job and they love the kids, you know, that they've also had a lot of teachers who, you know, are only just okay. And if we want more great teachers, that's the argument for why you have to raise pay.
Yeah. This is how you've put it in your writing. You said higher teacher salaries, you've described them as the sine qua non of reinvigorating our schools. Like that's the key? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes, it is. I mean, it's not the only thing, of course, but it's the most important. So if you want to ask what gets a kid a good education, the first most important thing is, of course, their home background and their family.
Yeah.
But that's nothing we can do very much about. Once they're in school, everybody agrees the most important single factor is the teacher.
You write that there's this myth that I mentioned that teaching is, quote unquote, different. It's this idea that because their job is so rewarding and because they're in it for the passion of it, that they don't really care that much about the financial motivation. Talk a little bit about that, because you say, as we heard from that comment from Matt up in Park City, look, I love it, but it matters to me how much I get paid.
So teaching is, for many people, a great, incredibly rewarding profession. But we all, at various points in our life, make choices, and we balance off something that we're really good at and something we love to do against how well does it pay? If we're really lucky, they come together and we happen to love and be good at a high-paying job. But for most of us, you know, there's some trade we make. And it's funny because teachers, maybe social workers, sometimes clergy, somehow we think these people aren't supposed to care about money. You know, if you think about would you like to be on the New York Yankees, which I'm sure at least half the audience is saying it'd be the worst thing that could happen to them in the world. But the other half would say, wow, well, you know, what an incredible thing that would be. But would you expect to be well paid? Yes, you would.
Yeah.
I mean, this is how American society operates. The things that we really want to pull really good people into, we pay them.
Yep. It's a tough assessment. Reading your writing, you talk about how you have all of those non-tangible factors that we throw into the mix that we were talking about. You know, it's rewarding, those kinds of things. So in that sense, it could be lower if we just make a basic economic assessment. It's really difficult, so it should be higher. There's a lot of job security, so it can be lower. I mean, it seems like all these factors make it really difficult to just, as you say, it's not an exact science, so plugging in a number makes it tough.
You're absolutely right, and you did leave one thing out, which is, in general, teachers tend to get somewhat better benefits.
Right.
Than
That's
other
a big
people.
One. Yeah.
So that it is, and so that is also a plus. But I come back to, are we getting enough of the really, really good teachers? I'm thinking, you know, when my kids, who are now young adults, graduated college, they had friends who were talking about going into teaching. They were thinking about Teach for America, or they were thinking about just going to get an education degree. And almost all of them, while being excited about that, in the end, somehow ended up doing something else. And it's not because teaching wasn't rewarding. It's, I think, because they came to realize that it just wasn't a very good long-term career prospect. Now, there is another thing going on. The number of people training to become teachers has gone way down. Mm-hmm. There's a bit of an idea that there's a national teacher shortage, and it's not so clear that that's really true. But there are clearly some important spot teacher shortages. In many places, in rural areas in particular, there's shortages of teachers. Teachers in the STEM subjects, the people who are going to teach chemistry and math and biology, things like that, those are often shortage. And there's a shortage in many places of special ed, which not only requires extra training and a whole bunch of extra skills that I think the rest of us all admire greatly.
Mm. Let's talk about numbers. As you put it in your writing, we want teacher salaries that are large, but not enormous. And the number you've come up with is 40%, a 40% increase. Work me through that, if you would.
Well, it's just like you said before, some of this is a bit of guesswork.
Sure.
But if we look at what a lot of other countries pay and the comparison is, you always want to kind of look at teachers versus other college graduates. Mm-hmm. Something like 40% makes sense. If you look at some of the historical comparisons from, say, way back, kind of after World War II, something like 40% might make sense. And the other thing you can do is, you can pick some other professions. We don't think we're going to pay teachers the way we pay a heart surgeon.
Yeah.
We're probably not going to pay them like we pay a corporate lawyer, but maybe something like paralegals. You could think of some other things that you think take about the same set of skills, and something like a 40% raise is right. I mean, this is not an exact magic number, but something like that. Now, Utah, of course, has the special issue that Utah really pays bad.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna get into that. It's interesting, professions earning about 40% more than teachers in 2008. There's you list this in an essay, a paper you wrote. Construction managers are about at 65. Detectives, 65. Physical therapists, right around $63,000 a year. And ironically, education administrators are around 65. And I guess we hear that a lot, right? Teachers leaving the profession to become a principal because they can just make more money.
That's absolutely right. And one of the ways to think about this is most careers have a bit of a career projection. That is, as you get better and you get more seniority, you can get a couple of promotions that come with more responsibility and more raises. And teachers, there's a salary schedule. They do get increases simply for seniority, but there's not really a promotion path. And the only one there is to principal. And, a lot of the teachers, like the people who are writing into you, their reward is working with the kids. They don't really want to be a principal. We probably don't really want them to be a principal.
Yeah.
So what some places have experimented with, although not huge amounts of experimenting, is some kind of master teacher track. One of the things which I think might be an interesting political approach to fixing some of these problems, and which there has been some experimentation with, is either bonuses or permanent raises for teachers who are clearly doing a great job, or establishing a master teacher track where they get paid more. Maybe they do a little coaching of beginning teachers, which clearly beginning teachers really would like to have more help. So that's instead of simply saying let's raise all salaries, that's another idea of how to get more money to teachers for their long-term career. So teacher starting salaries are not – they're maybe a little low, but they're not so terrible compared to other starting salaries after college. But as you get further out, the gap gets bigger and bigger.
I think you have to look back at history to see where salaries were in the past. And this is something you've written about, because you argue that teachers used to be much more in line with the rest of the working force. Talk a little bit about that. This is interesting. You talk about how much teachers earned in 1940 compared to 2008, for example. Would you say a little bit about that? Because I think this is an important point.
Well, I think you just said it. If you go look back in history and you look at teacher salaries and non-teacher salaries, the teachers were looking a lot better than they do now. And of course, part of this is, in general, the return to a college education has gone way up. And that's set by the market. So in the free market, we see that getting a college degree is worth a whole lot, but teacher salaries are basically set by the government, and they just haven't kept up over this long period of time.
I want to ask you, let me take a call, because I think one of the comments here is going to relate to something that I want to ask you about. Let's talk to Ben, who's with us in Ogden. Ben, welcome.
Yes, hello. So my comment is I'm actually looking at becoming a teacher. I'm graduating college in the next year, but I don't know that I can afford to become a teacher, and that's one point. And my second one is, if we cut off some funding for prisons and put it maybe in education, we could avoid the outcome of prison in the first place.
Yeah, thank you, Ben. So two points here, of course. One is that he's not sure he wants to wade into all of this, isn't sure he's going to be able to, as he put it, afford it. But then secondly, it's a sort of a broader question about, I'm not sure how much you can say about this, but if we shift our societal priorities more toward education, will it have a bigger benefit? What do you say about that?
I should say that I think it was nice to hear from people like Ben, because I think people telling their personal stories, frankly, communicate sometimes better than talking about statistics.
Yeah.
But I actually did a calculation in this book I wrote where you look at if you could get better teachers, that would get kids better education, and we can get some very rough measurements of that, and they're pretty rough. And better education leads to those people earning more money. I mean, there's all sorts of important things about education that aren't just about getting jobs and earning money, but one of the important things is that people earn more money, which means they pay more taxes.
Yeah.
And my calculations were that if we spent more money on teacher salaries, that over a long haul, the increase in taxes collected would more than pay for the extra expenditure. Mm. And of course, this wasn't really including things like better educated people. They're obviously less likely to be unemployed. They're less likely to be on welfare. They are much less likely to end up in prison.
Yeah.
They tend to have better health. They're not going to be in the emergency room so much. So paying teachers more is actually a perfectly sensible, purely financial investment on top of just making things better for our kids. But one of the problems is if you invest in teachers, which is investing in kids, well, the financial payoff is down the road, and our political system is just not very good at investing today for a payoff that's 10, 20, 30 years and down the road.
Here's a comment from Trent, who writes, I'm a native Utahn who left and taught in the inner city of Memphis, Tennessee. I'm no longer, though, a teacher, primarily based on my earning potential. He writes, I loved teaching and would likely still be teaching were it not for the terrible pay. He says many of my middle-aged colleagues had second jobs at Home Depot, refereeing sports, or waiting tables just to make ends meet. So, Trent, they're saying that economics is a decisive issue for him, and this is something you've looked into, and that is the second jobs that teachers have to make. What are you learning about that?
Well, I was very surprised. It turns out that teachers are considerably more likely to have second jobs than are other than the rest of us, than other college-educated people. And, you know, I had thought, sure, they're going to have another job in the summer. That turns out not to be it.
Yeah.
They're just doing other things, working all year round. I'm not talking about people who are coach on the side, talking about people working for somebody other than their own school district. Some of them are doing some tutoring on the side or teaching on the side, but when you look at the list of what they do, it just covers everything. I got home a few months ago and took a lift home, and the driver was a local high school teacher. Mm. And, you know, it meant we had a nice conversation on the ride, but I was thinking, you know, after this guy's been working all day, I don't know if he should be grading papers or he should just be finally getting some sleep. Teachers do a lot of this second job, and it surprised me.
Yeah. This is how you put it in one of your when you're writing about these second jobs, you asked, does it make someone a better teacher, these second jobs, or does it just make them a more tired teacher?
Yeah, and I have to say that since I wrote that, I found some data that actually came out of Texas where some people at Sam Houston University did a survey of teachers and of those who did second jobs. And if you ask the teachers who have second jobs, does it make them a better teacher? They say no. They say it makes it worse.
Yeah. All of that said, you've written that there really is only one acid test, and it's this. Are we attracting and retaining enough great teachers? What do you think?
I think that is exactly the acid test. All these other discussions about comparing to other professions or what was the historical salary, those are just to help us get an idea of where we need to go. And I think the answer is no, we are not. We have, and you know, you opened the show with what sounded like an email from a fantastic teacher. We have great teachers, but I'm thinking of my own kids. They had quite a few fantastic teachers. Partially, this is because they had two middle-class parents who knew how to manipulate the system some and make sure they had very good teachers. Mm-hmm. But they also had some number of okay teachers. And we're going to – you know, we need okay teachers. That's not a great knock. And they had a very small number of teachers who really should never have been allowed in front of children. And so we need to just shift up the whole thing. We need to find those people who – I mean, the only people who are going to be great teachers are people who are passionate about it. You're not going to get great teachers just because of the money.
Yeah.
But you can find some people who are passionate, who are going to give up on their passion because they need to take care of their own family as well. So the money matters there, and it's like, you know, every company in the United States, what do they do – if they need to hire better people, well, you know, they search harder and they advertise more and they try to be more careful about who they pick. But fundamentally, in the end, you have to pay people more to get them into your company. And school districts need to do the same thing.
Final quick question. What do you make of what's happening in Oklahoma and West Virginia?
Incredibly surprising. I mean, these are, you know, very conservative states.
Yes.
They're not incredibly pro-union states.
Yes.
There is an important aspect, which is there are some states in which the state legislature actually sets teacher salaries directly. In most states, the state legislature provides money and the school districts decide the salary. But in those particular states, it's actually the state legislature deciding, and that's why there's so much focus on this statewide issue. I also think that some of this may continue to spread because the teachers seem to have won at least something. Mm. It's not everywhere we need to go, but they have made some progress. And, you know, maybe Utah so far has been lucky that teachers aren't driving across the border to Nevada where they could get paid a lot more.
Dick Starts writes about education for Brookings Institution. He's the author of the book Profit of Education. Joined us from the studios of UC Santa Barbara, where he teaches economics. Professor, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Doug.
We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
You hear stories on KUER. They make you think and laugh. Sometimes they frustrate you. And sometimes they even make you cry. When that happens, what's the first thing you want to do? Share the story, of course. And thankfully, local stories you hear on the air wind up at KUER.org. You'll find news, podcasts, and all the Radio West you want, plus community events. When you hear a story you love, spread the love at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the value of teachers, and not just value in this abstract sense, like how we value their commitment or their passion, but we're also talking in practical terms. If we truly value teachers, how much money do we or should we pay them? We were talking to an economist a moment ago about that. He had a number in mind, 40%, a 40% raise, he said. Where is Utah? Where does Utah stack up in all of that? Joining us now on the program is Andrea Rohrer, director of the Utah Education Policy Center at the University of Utah, teaches in the Department of Educational Leadership and Policy Studies. She's been looking into teacher recruitment and retention in Utah. She's been looking at that for a long time now, in fact. And Andrea Rohrer, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Lee Hale is also with us. He's going to join us here in a moment. He, of course, is KUER's education reporter. And Lee, welcome to you.
Hey.
So, Andrea Rohrer, I wanted to get you to respond just briefly before we jump into some comparisons here to the point that Dick Starts was talking about earlier, that, you know, this idea that there's this kind of myth in teaching that we think about teachers differently because, you know, they're committed to the kids and they have this passion. And so we don't have to really think about paying them in the same kind of way we would a dental hygienist or something.
I think that's true. Initially, I thought it was just the assumptions we had about teachers. However, now I think it's the conclusions we've made about teachers and the profession. In that teachers, and we found this in our survey and our research, is that teachers do come into the profession because they're committed to children. They're committed to society and societal good. However, while they are doing something in service for others, that doesn't make them part of the service industry. And yet we're paying them like they're in the service industry rather than being a professional entity that is providing service to someone.
So one of the things that you told us was that the idea that teachers come into this with this commitment becomes the weapon against them.
It is absolutely the weapon against them with regard to conditions, working conditions, pay, other economic considerations, even with regard to how they come into the profession through their certification in universities and colleges and that route with regard to the expense it takes. Because while others, according to the Economic Policy Institute several years ago, would come out of a bachelor's degree making $50,000, they projected that in education, one would start on average at about $34,000. And that makes a huge difference when you're paying anywhere from, you know, $7,000 a year in tuition to upwards of, it could be $50,000, $60,000, depending on the institution you're going to.
So where does Utah fit in all of this? And we talk about this all the time. And it seems like, on one hand, these side-by-side graphs are kind of a blunt instrument. It seems hard to compare Utah to Massachusetts, you know, because there are these regional differences that you have to account for, I suppose, cost of living and kinds of all those kinds of things. So when you do make the adjustment, what does the picture look like? Where does Utah situate itself?
When you put us in the larger national landscape of teacher pay, we're still, I believe, around, according to NCES, the National Center for Educational Statistics, somewhere around 45th in the country with regard to pay. And looking at pay holding constant, some of the Bureau of Economic Statistics information, we are still among the bottom five. With regard to pay. And if you look at gender differences, we drop down to just being ahead of Louisiana. And so—
Wait, would you explain that? What do you mean?
So with regard to comparisons between what males are paid in the profession and females are paid in the profession, we are significantly lower, just generally in the economics of how individuals are paid in the state. And so females being paid somewhere in the realm of about 30% less than males in the profession. And so when you look at a profession that's predominantly female, then it cascades into a much larger issue.
Wait. In 2018, women are paid how much less than men in the teaching profession?
In general, 30%.
Wow.
And so that varies. So someone's immediately going to say, but I know that there's this teacher who's female and this teacher who's male who are paid the same. That is not always the case when we look at the aggregate numbers and look on average. And that trend holds across other professions as well. I mean, we've made progress in terms of raising pay for females across professions, but it is still generally less than males.
What's interesting about there was this National Center for Education Statistics, and they did this kind of comparison, mm-hmm. and they adjusted for those regional differences. And it's interesting to see where Utah fits, because we have a relatively high median income, right? Mm-hmm. But Utah, so it was really interesting when you looked at, for example, Hawaii, mm-hmm. where they compared to the rest of the country, they were right at the top almost. And then when you accounted for the regional differences, they were practically at the bottom. I think they mm-hmm. might be exactly at the bottom. The same thing happened for Maine. Mm-hmm. Utah doesn't move all that much. Average salary is about $46,000.
Right.
And then when you adjust for those differences, it's $49,000, which mm-hmm. is still way down there. It's $46,000, right near the bottom.
Correct. And one of the things that sort of poses many questions for us is the value that the Utah society, that Utah as a state, has for education. I think Utah is rare in that we have a lot of collaboration and convergence between the state legislature, the state office of education, districts and schools, and the community about the value for education. However, the economics of it, the compensation, if you will, for what teachers do is not matched when we look nationally at the national landscape. And so that raises questions for us with regard to what do folks think that teachers are actually doing.
Yeah.
And so how we average the pay or how we look at their pay with regard to what they're putting in. So it's not just their 7 or 7.5 hour contract day. It's everything from planning, increasing their content knowledge, which is extremely important to them. Again, the reasons that teachers come into the profession and stay is because of their commitment to children and working with children in society, but is also the content knowledge and wanting to make a difference. And that wanting to make a difference, the belief that they can make a difference leads to their is part of their individual efficacy. And that is something that they have to keep up on every day.
Yeah.
And so we've minimized as a society actually all of the work and the knowledge and the skills that have to go into being a high quality teacher. And as a result, then when you start looking at hourly wages, we don't stack up that well with regard to how again, it's back, I hate to say it, but it's back to the analogy of thinking of teaching as part of the service industry rather than a service profession.
How much do you hear, and I used to hear this all the time, people saying, well, it's a pretty good job. They have the whole summer off.
They do. But technically, they are not on contract. I will not agree that they have the summer
off.
Well,
just talk to a teacher. just talk to a teacher about
exactly.
That. Exactly. All right, let's bring Lee Hale into the conversation. And I guess we should start with the disclosure. Lee, you used to be a teacher.
Used to be a teacher. I'm a wolf in sheep's clothing. Maybe a sheep in wolf's clothing.
That's
I don't know.
Right. I should also disclose, I guess, because...
you went to school, right?
I went to school. And my daughter is a teacher also, so it probably makes some sense to disclose that. Let's start with that, though, Lee. How much did the fact that you were a teacher influence the way you've been thinking about this lately?
It influences everything. I taught in Jordan District here in Salt Lake Valley. I only taught for 1 year, so I'm one of the statistics of the people that last the year. It was 2014, 2015 year. And so salary, it's a value placed on you as a teacher, and that can hurt you. I mean, because you can be exhausted, especially as a first-year teacher. You are just, you're staying late, you're getting early, and you feel like you're still failing.
Yep.
And then on top of that, you feel like with this value statement, it's like, and this is what I'm worth. And it's hard not for that to get into your head. It's not just about buying groceries and paying rent. It's a value statement on your work. And then when the district doesn't have money to spend, they're not spending it on you improving. So I had a mentor who was overworked, who I saw maybe twice that year. And I'm not going to say that it was his fault. I think he had plenty to do. But I didn't feel like there was really an investment in me as a teacher. Like the fact that I wasn't a squeaky wheel and I was trying to do my job was good enough. And I couldn't have articulated this at the time. But I remember just progressively as the year went on, I thought, I'm clearly not worth that much. I'm kind of an island in this classroom. I felt kind of isolated. And before I knew it, I was looking for other jobs.
So what do teachers tell you now? I mean, you were working on a story, for example, that about whether or not Utah teachers might be like West Virginia or Oklahoma and whether they might be inclined to do something about that. And we'll get to that in a moment. But what do they say? What are you hearing from teachers who about that question, the passion part versus they want to be paid?
It depends on how long they've been in the profession. It depends on where they're teaching. Mm-hmm. So last year we saw a few districts, especially along the Wasatch Front, really bump up their salaries. I was making $33,000 as a new teacher in 2014, and teachers in Jordan are now making $40,000. So in a few years, it's a pretty big increase. So for new teachers, it's kind of becoming competitive. Especially in Salt Lake Valley. So I think that they're just not as worried about it. Mid-career teachers are still kind of an afterthought. They didn't see that much of an increase last year with those raises, and they're feeling kind of the squeeze. They're feeling kind of punished for being willing to stay in this profession that they love. And that's a terrible feeling. And then also you look at rural districts where they didn't see any increase, and they're kind of like the forgotten. And so I think there's an anxiety, but it's not unified. Right? Some of these states, when they have these base salaries statewide, it's different because everyone's kind of rallies together. Here, districts have a lot more leeway. And so you find that some people feel compensated, or at least they feel like they're not upset. I think they could all agree that they need a little more.
Sure.
But others are being squeezed, and it's just not the unification you see elsewhere.
What are you seeing about that? Are you seeing movement on salaries? Are we seeing competition now among districts and those kinds of things?
And talking with superintendents and others in the school districts, we're hearing that there's quite a bit of competition. And for example, last summer when announcements were made with regard to districts increasing their entry pay, for instance, or the amount of raise, some of the districts reported shifts in who was in their district. And we already know, for instance, and it was mentioned by The Economist, that we have science and math teachers moving between districts more often than other teachers, and that becomes a great pool. And so you see this talent migration out of districts that we have to be attentive to. That competition, while I know economists might think say that the free market is positive and it rallies everyone and everyone's boat rises, we're not sure that we're going to see that. We just know that there's competition for teachers. It doesn't tell us whether or not they're going to stay. So it turns out that apparently leave, though we didn't know that at the time because we don't have individual data, was part of our sample when we looked at teachers who
I'm
were
a number.
Leaving. You're just a dot. Who was leaving the profession. And so we know that among the teachers who entered in 2008-09 that we lost 56% of those teachers. And the highest amount that we lost were among those who were 25 and younger. 73% of them left. And so while the initial salary might be important, it's certainly not going to carry through to the other factors that Lee mentioned with regard to support once individuals are in the profession and understanding what the needs and demands are for their job.
Can I just say, with schools are not the building, schools are the teachers.
Correct.
And so when there's that kind of turnover, that's a different school.
Yeah.
A principal recently said to me, I'm training these teachers, I'm investing in them, and if they're gone, that's starting from scratch. And so I think we forget that sometimes. This is a good school. Well, the teachers are good in the school.
Right.
And when you have turnover like that, it's kind of, you don't know what you're going to get in a few years.
Here's a comment from BJ who writes, my wife has been a fourth grade teacher for 15 years. She loves it. She's great at it. She'd love to keep teaching until she retires. But the retirement system bases retirement benefits on the highest years of salary. And the only way she could have a decent retirement income is to stop teaching and go into administration. So we talked about that, Andrea, a little bit earlier with The Economist, this idea that administrators get paid reasonably well, and that's a draw for teachers. And it's just such a strange dilemma, it seems, for teachers, because you want the good ones to stay in the classroom.
Well, we certainly do want high-quality teachers in the classroom. We also need high-quality leaders in the principal's position and other administrative positions, including instructional coaches. I think that, again, back to the efforts of the state, is that our State Office of Education, State Board of Education, and others are looking into micro-credentials and ways that they can inherently make staying at the classroom level or below administration, if you will, in what would be considered a hierarchy, more appealing because it attends to the professional needs and the trajectory, professional trajectory that one may have to demonstrate their expertise. That doesn't mean, however, I won't concede that administrators in our state are being paid well either.
Oh, really? Okay, okay. Just being paid better than teachers.
Just being paid better than teachers, okay. Exactly.
Let me read a few here. Jared writes, my wife's a longtime teacher with a master's degree. One of the biggest hindrances to pay, in our opinion, is the inability to fire poor performing teachers. How do you improve education when you can't get rid of poor performing teachers? Is that a factor?
And teacher pay? No. I do not believe that it is, and the data certainly don't prove that out. In that, one, we have a lot of mechanisms in our state with regard to providing, understanding the performance of teacher, finding ways that we can address their individual needs, and having them invested in addressing their individual needs for growth. And so that doesn't seem to have a bearing.
People can be a little condescending when they talk about teacher quality, as if like we're, you know, the teachers are these other people, and there's good ones, bad ones, you know, you can thrust them away. These are professionals. Right. And we don't talk, we talk about teaching differently. I think that's part of the problem. And as a teacher, I saw teachers who were tired. Mm-hmm. I saw teachers who were frustrated. I saw teachers who maybe weren't doing as good of a job as they wanted to do. But to call these are bad, these are good. I mean, that's just two dimensional thinking. I just don't think that works.
Do we think about it do we think about them as professionals? Do we think about it in the same way? I'm not sure this is a question you can answer, but what do you think? Do we think about them in the same way we do think about other professional vocations?
I think the rhetoric is that we think about them as we do other professionals. I think the actions, the value is there, the actions may not be. And this is not the fault of any one person or any one policy decision. But systemically, and particularly since the profession turned over to be more female than male, the profitability, the ability to make a living, the value that others put on it, the value that they have in what's being done isn't there in the same way, certainly with actions to back it up. And so part of what we have to do is shift the narrative and how we talk about educators and the professional roles that they have and the professional knowledge and skills that they have to do their job and stop minimizing that, not only during Teacher Appreciation Week, but throughout the year. And so considering all of the factors that have to go into a given day or what they have to do to adjust to 35 individual children on a daily basis, or if they're in the high school, 235 children, whatever the case may be, and how they meet their learning needs. Very few professions have to make that many adjustments on a momentary basis as educators do to meet the needs and to help people progress from where they are to where they need to be to demonstrate outcomes.
Let me read a few more comments from Michelle, who writes, I've been a classroom teacher for 24 years now. I love every minute I'm in a classroom. I teach high school, and I love having the opportunity to be a positive role model for my students, as well as providing a safe place for them to share their opinions and thoughts. I keep coming back year after year because I see the impact that I'm making. This comes from James, who writes, I'm a teacher due to my passion for education. Most people don't see me as a counselor, a family support mechanism, a provider of supplies and daily needs. The job isn't simply teaching kids. It's so much more, and this occurs every day. We wear many hats. And then this question, which is going to get us into this part of the conversation, this is from Mark, is striking effective? I've wondered for years why Utah teachers don't strike. Let me start with you, Lee. Why don't they? It seems like there are some particulars about Utah and Utah culture that might play into this. But first of all, are you hearing that? Are people like, I'm sick of this. We're going to strike.
Yeah, I don't have a satisfactory poll, but I've been talking to teachers, especially in Jordan District. I mentioned them earlier because they had a recent raise last year.
Yeah.
But the mid-career teachers didn't see as much of a raise. I think overall what I'm hearing is that salary isn't a huge topic of conversation right now. It's not occupying teachers' minds like it is in these other states. I think that depends on the teacher. I talked to a new teacher who couldn't even tell me how much she was making exactly, and I said the district would be happy to hear that actually. Because when I was a new teacher, I knew exactly how much I was being paid because I was not happy with it. So I think there's some people who aren't preoccupied with it. And one thing for these teacher walkouts, I think what's so striking about a place like West Virginia, for instance, was the unity, was the sheer numbers. That's not to say that walkouts are the only way a teacher can raise their voice about this.
Of course.
I think in Utah, you've seen kind of this similar thoughts happening kind of in slow motion. Heidi Matthews, who's head of the top union here in the state, that's what she says, is we've been hearing from teachers. It's just been happening over a course of time, and the legislature has been listening in some ways. So walkouts are not the only thing you can do, and I think teachers have been raising their voices over time.
What do you think about that? Do you think that Utah might follow a model of a West Virginia or of an Oklahoma, or is it too early for something like that? Or what are you seeing, Andrea?
I don't think that we're likely to see a strike in the same way that some of the other states have seen, in part because of the collaboration in the state. With regard to this year's current legislation or legislative session, I think we saw a $65 million infusion of money to education. And the state is giving the districts the opportunity and the flexibility to address teacher pay in ways that make sense for particular districts. And so because of the nature of that kind of convergence in desire to raise raise teacher pay, I see it as unlikely that we will head to a strike.
There was this, Lee, there was this initiative, our Schools Now initiative, this group wanting to raise hundreds of millions of dollars for schools. And then what ended up happening, it was sort of like the Count My Vote initiative. There was this negotiation that went on between lawmakers who were trying to head off this petition initiative. And so they made this negotiation. And I'm wondering how people are thinking about all of that. I mean, it was significantly less than
what
compromise. They wanted. But it
was
that's
a compromise. That's what they call it. That's what a compromise is, right? And a lot of this will hinge on November. There's still going to be a ballot, something on the ballot about gas tax, 10% increase to every gallon of gas. If that passes, then the funding will be significantly more than if it doesn't. I think I talked to the director of Our Schools Now yesterday, Austin Cox, and he said the whole point was that the legislature wasn't doing enough. And the fact that they are responding and communicating, that was kind of the point, right?
Like, pay attention to this.
Pay attention to this. And the legislature didn't want to see a ballot initiative kind of go around them and raise taxes. And the danger there, potentially, is that if that ballot initiative had worked, the legislature could have been tempted to pull back their funding. They're planning it for the future. And so in this way, they own it now. This is now their initiative. And so in that way, they are going to stick with it, if that makes sense. So I think that Our Schools Now is healthier because of that. And this is kind of, and this will lead to some increase in salary.
One of the things that makes Utah unique, Lee, that you found is that the LDS Church, Mormons might not be inclined to go on strike or take kindly to people who do.
Well, Mormons are used to having callings where they get paid nothing to do a ton of work. So I think sometimes it's the martyrdom mentality, or at least the willingness to give more than you're getting paid for, that's pretty common. And to do it happily. You know, with a song in your heart, right? I'm not going to say that speaks for every teacher, because of course it doesn't. But I think that you find amazing people who are willing to just do this work for very little. Sometimes that's admirable. Sometimes it complicates things, because I think it's fair to say, well, I'm not willing to give everything for this. So that's a struggle. I think some people would just by principle not be willing to ever walk out on their classes.
Andrea, can you plug culture into this story much? How do you think about that dynamic?
We hear a different sense of collaboration here than we do in other states. We have certainly have not measured to what degree that is occurring. In our surveys, what we've asked are, what are the promptings? What's influencing you to stay? What's influencing you to move? And what's influencing you to leave? And for those teachers that are leaving, while salary is always important, it is not the top reason they are leaving. For teachers who are leaving, we're getting reports that exhaustion and stress. And I think people like to bring that down or funnel that down to they just can't take it, and that's not it. Again, it gets back to how we value or how we see educators and their profession, and that is that it is an intensely demanding job, both cognitively and behaviorally. And as a result, we don't take that into account, and so it's not honored. It's not honored in pay. It's not honored in schedules. It's time off, time for planning, time for development, rejuvenation, et cetera. And as was noted earlier, when a number of teachers are working second jobs, when do you have that downtime? When do you have time to think and problem solve? The demands are just too high.
Let me just give people a sense of how many comments we've had about that. There were a lot. Like, people were just, this is exhausting. And we heard a lot of that. It's really difficult. Lee, we're essentially out of time, but I do want to make note of the story that you've produced in Utah's Monument Valley, because this is a way where you had tribal education leaders looking for ways to keep and attract teachers. And one of them was to just pay them more money, significantly more. Since we're out of time, we don't have a lot of time to talk about that, but it seemed like that was about trust and consistency. Say something about that, if you would, finally.
It's a little more responsibility and a little more pay. Yeah. I would say watch the video, because you see this teacher who is making $70,000 to teach elementary school, and you do not doubt her love for her kids. This idea that, you know, it should be all about the kids. Here's somebody who really appreciates the salary, and in fact, it helps her do her job. She is kind of, that's one less thing to worry about. And so I think it's that simple. If you value them, if you pay them more, if you treat them with respect, they'll probably stick around.
Lee's referring to a short film produced by Radio West Films. It's called Will You Be Here Next Year? You can have a look at it at radiowest.org. And tune in to Morning Edition tomorrow to hear Lee's story that he's working on, the likelihood of whether Utah teachers will go on strike. Lee Hale, thank you very much for joining us. And Andrea Rohr, director of the Utah Education Policy Center. Thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to those of you who have taken the time to write in. We appreciate that. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Technical direction from Tim Slover. The program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.